Yeah, so I kind of know the basic premise and whatnot.
Sure. You got the shtick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Rhyme or free, it doesn't matter to me. It's my bad poetry. Good day, and welcome to My Bad Poetry, a podcast where we take a deep dive into our poems from youth, yesteryear, or even yesterday, always asking the question, why in the world did I write this? I'm Aaron.
And I'm Dave.
And today we have with us a stick figure poet from Lehigh Valley, or at least the founder and co-host of Those Things and Places, the collector of sacred things, which is his own business, Daryl Perry. Welcome to My Bad Poetry.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's going to be really cool.
Normally I ask, is there anything in this intro that we might have missed? This time I know I missed a lot. I was trying to do some twists and turns, but, you know, I gathered all these things and they ultimately ended up being ephemeral. So I let them go.
I really thought you were going to make a comment about it being like, you know, a stick figure, not a full-fledged picture of Daryl's life. But
no, I went the other way. You have a book out?
I do. It's actually, I'm getting really sick of talking about it.
At this point. But moving on. Stick figure.
No. I would be remiss if I did not.
Of course.
It came out in 2021, so it's been around for a while. But it's called Twists Gathered Ephemera, as we may have alluded to earlier, possibly. It's basically a collection of kind of like the stuff that people seem to like the most at readings.
Because you do a lot of public readings, right?
I typically write to be heard, not to be read.
Cool. Okay.
Which means there's a ton of typos and misspellings. And like, because I work on Google Docs, there's a lot of completely random things capitalized, which sure. I think that's my claim to fame right there, is that I randomly capitalized totally like just throughout the entire piece.
It's not like an E.E. Cummings. There's great meaning behind this. It's literally just Google correcting and
exactly. Like, I decided to put a line break and it capitalized it for no reason. Then I took the line break out, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. Oh, wow. Is there anything else?
A few things. Stick Figure Poetry is my quarterly online poetry journal. We take submissions. It's the email address to send those to is stickfigurepoetrysubmissions@gmail.com. Perfect. I did not create that email address. My daughter did. So that's why it's like 3,000 miles long. Like, I definitely cut that down. I can't even type that without misspelling it, honestly. Good luck to people who want to submit.
That's half the challenge. You got to get it spelled right.
The website is stickfigurepoetry.com, which is much easier to type. So
nice.
You can find the submission information there and everything, and check out the archives and all the past issues. I've been doing it for about 3 years, and it's been really fun, actually.
Awesome. That's really great. Cool. And then what's the Lehigh Valley connection?
Okay, well, Lehigh Valley is where I live. I live in Easton, Pennsylvania, which is on the Lehigh and the Delaware River, actually. It's right where they converge.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we're actually more towards the Lehigh River side, so we're the Lehigh Valley. So we have, like, the worst allergies known to man. We're in a valley, and, like, everything just kind of, like, collects here, and, like, the pollen just kind of hangs out, and it's horrible. But anyway.
I live in the Minnesota River Valley, so.
There you go.
Yep,
you know.
It's great. It's not disgusting at all.
Oh. Well, Dave, speaking of disgusting, what poem do you have for this?
I bring today a poem called Cognitive Dissonance. A pacifist, opposed to violence, a huge fan of fictional wars and battles. A socialist, praying for societal standards, hoarding resources in the land of Albion and Hyrule. A person doing his best to be anti-racist, watching space cowboys and heroes destroy alien homeworlds. A person hoping for an idealized world, making his fears come to life in the imaginary.
Ooh. Dave.
It's not terrible. It's not good. It's definitely bad.
For your hastily written weekly shtick, this was very self-exploratory.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I I was reading a science fiction book that had nothing to do with like battles or wars or anything. It was just a crew of a spaceship. And I thought, oh, I love this. This is so great. This is what I want from science fiction. And I was listening to this audiobook as I was playing a Star Wars game and shooting guns and hopping in tanks. And I was like, wow, this is, ooh, this does not feel correct.
Any insights or thoughts on Dave's hastily written poem for the week?
Honestly, it sounds like the kind of stuff that a lot of people I hang out with would write.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's a compliment.
Definitely, definitely. Well, you know, since I still hang out with them, obviously. Yeah.
All of Daryl's friends, if you write crap like I do, he's insulting you right now. I'm just saying.
What resonated with me is that exact dissonance of like the things I consume and enjoy reading and watching versus like the things I espouse to.
Right, your actual beliefs.
It kind of brought to mind cowboy movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My dad watches nothing but cowboy movies. And there was actually, I have a poem about this, which I'm not going to read today, but there was actually one point at which he said, it must have been really scary for those people with all those Indians around.
Oh, no.
And I was just horrified by the thought of...
Yeah.
Like the people in the equation.
And that's why, like, science fiction, I love science fiction, but at its core, it's often about racism and a lot of sexism too. But like, we can't talk about our internalized racism, so we'll make an alien species and we can talk about racism that way, pretending like we've solved our problem.
Yeah. So we've gone way off the rails, but Daryl, you have given us three bad poems to deal with today. I often find that our guests post them in the order they expect to be read. So are we going to start our reading today with World?
Okay. Yeah, this one, I have no idea. I don't even remember this poem, actually. I found it in a random, like... 8.5 by 11 folded chapbook and actually had to like type it in because it does not exist digitally. So I'm gonna guess it's like 1993, 1994, maybe.
Okay. That's incredible. Okay. Very exciting.
So, okay. World. I could have written this world into existence 1,000 times. Instead, I squat in filth and scratch pictures into the dirt with my toes, too crazy to be trusted with anything sharper than my own fat tongue. My wild eyes look upon the outside jealously. No, this world is far beyond my capacity. I could never have made it. I couldn't possibly have come up with anything crazier than I am. I understand that now.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay.
That is the perfect description of this poem.
Yeah, oh, my God, okay. I totally agree. Totally agree.
Walk us through this, Daryl. You said you don't remember when. You gave us a kind of an estimate. But do you have any sense of context of...
Oh, of course I do.
Oh, good.
That's actually why I included it, because... there was my very first poem I ever wrote is what I was actually looking for. And it is similar to this, but it rhymes. So that would have been first.
That would have been even
but
better.
But somehow between when I first signed up for the podcast and when I sent you the information, I lost the single sheet of paper that it was on. It's somewhere in it's like, I must've filed it away somewhere that I don't remember, I guess. But the point is, that this is you're totally your early 90s Gen X like scenario. We were listening to Pink Floyd and loved One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Clockwork Orange. We were reading Bukowski, you know. we were like venerating mental illness and alcoholism and thinking it was like the coolest thing on earth, you know. But I mean, back then you didn't really talk about stuff like that the way we do now. We didn't have that kind of that that knowledge, that understanding of, like, you know, this is actually bad.
Right.
We were total posers, is really what it boils down to.
So the start of this sounds like kind of like, oh, I could have done this. My craziness, my wild eyes. But the turn seems to, are you acknowledging a bit of that poserness? Is there some self-awareness here?
I don't think so. Okay. I think it's just like, you know, it's just how messed up the world really is or was at that time or how we perceived it. I mean, like, no, right. Looking at things now as compared to back then, like it's way worse now. There's way crazier shit out there now. But
no one would have come up with this dystopia.
But I feel like that's always where you're at when whatever generation you're in. Like, I'm sure, like, no. You know, like young people in the 1950s were like, oh my God, this world sucks and it's never gonna, you know, like.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, it's like the an optimist thinks that this is the best of all possible worlds, but a pessimist knows that it is. Like, this is the best of all possible worlds and it still blows. I just keep coming back to the phrase, instead, I squat in filth.
I honestly, like, I was like, you know, the most like suburban, like privileged white kid that you can ever possibly imagine. And this is the kind of stuff that I was coming up with.
Oh, this is me singing Rent in high school and being like, ooh, I'm edgy, singing a Broadway musical.
Okay, so there's quite a cockiness to the first three lines.
Absolutely.
That I love. Because it does really feel like that kind of first creative spark when you start out writing and you're like, oh yeah, I could totally do.
Yep.
Right.
When, like, you know, 30 years later, here I am looking at this thing going, like, you know,
it feels like that is something that is useful, though. Like, I imagine a lot of authors and poets and filmmakers and all types of creative people need some of that cockiness to be like, oh, I am a genius enough to do this. And then through growth, they can look back and go, oh, yeah. I was an idiot. I still am an idiot, but I'm learning.
Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there.
You wonder how many amazing artists and poets and writers we miss out on because they aren't bestowed that kind of, they can't be cocky in this world because they've been oppressed or pushed down or told that that's not flattering for them. And yet, as three white guys, we sit down and we're like, I could write worlds.
Yep.
The absolute irony of this is I'm like totally have like self-esteem issues and like I'm not that cocky person at all. I'm like I won't even like speak when I'm in a room with too many people in it, and you know, I'm like so passive, it's ridiculous.
So when you started writing out poetry, was this a private venture? Were you writing in journals?
Okay. Interestingly, I had a friend, and this goes back to the insanity alcoholism conversation, actually. Okay. He had actually just gotten out of a mental institution.
Oh.
The police picked him up dodging cars on the highway, and he told them that he wanted to taste death. So he was like on the fifth floor of our local hospital for until he was deemed sane. This was the first poet I ever met. He has since died of alcoholism, basically. And so this is the things that I'm like seeing from back then, and I'm kind of learning now. And well, not that I didn't know them before, right. You know, like over time we learn these things that, like, you know, it really was a cry for help and it wasn't cool, but he was the cool friend that everybody wanted. Turns out that I grew up constantly being told that I was a great artist and that I should pursue artistic things, drawing, that sort of thing. A friend of mine and I, we would draw comic books together. And what I realized eventually was that, like, he was better at me than the art part, at the art part. Mm. Like, I was constantly trying to catch up with him, but getting better all the time because I was trying to catch up with him and he was getting better. So really, but every time he had a plot issue, he would come and ask me for help. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'm good at the writing portion of this whole thing. So in high school, I was told by one of my English professors that I had a way with words and was like, you know, I should really pursue this. So when I met this poet dude, he's like, you should start writing poetry. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't do that. I write fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually he wore me down enough that I started writing crap like this. But fortunately evolved from that. So
right. Sure. Right.
Now, did you share a poem with the world? This poem titled World, did you share it with the world in any way?
No. I mean, no. We would print out little like chapbooks and things like that. Just basically, of course, because it was the 90s, we would run them off on a photocopier because, you know, computers and printers weren't a thing back then. So we would just, like, you know, like cut and paste, like physically cut and paste things onto a piece of paper and then run them through a photocopy machine and like staple them together. And we would like go to like music festivals and stuff and like hand them to random people. So that is pretty much the extent back then of sharing anything with the world.
That's incredible.
That takes a lot of confidence. Yeah, like to just
I didn't do it often. I always had them, but I very rarely handed them in to anybody.
Sure.
You can also like do all kinds of cool things, like just leave them in the laundromat or like in public restrooms, or I mean, I still do that. I mean, we actually Lehigh Valley Poetry is one of the organizations in our area that runs events and things like that. And they would often do a zine swap every year where they'd collect a bunch of people's like addresses and then we would all make a zine and like send it to each other.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I have, and we also have the Easton Book Festival, which is a cool event that we have here in every October. We get like 200 authors or so, and we do like nonstop events from Friday night all the way through Sunday. So we usually have a zine swap during that also, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
So I still have reasons to come up with these little zines and things like that, but much less so than I did back then because that was my only form of getting the word out.
Yeah.
Now the tech has changed a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You're not going to your library photocopier and handing it out at concerts.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of sad because it was like, it was very like underground punk at the time. You would go to work and be like, oh my God, all right, nobody's looking. I can photocopy 100 copies of this. You know? Like, you had to get away with it back then.
Stick it to the man.
Now you can print it out on your home printer and be like, yeah, whatever. All right, nobody cares.
That's incredible.
This is not subversive at all.
Well, I mean, if you're writing stuff like this, it's still
submersive.
It's a submersible.
It can also be submersive.
Yeah.
I'm so good at words.
Yeah, it really brings us into this world building. So I'm looking at this next one. And
oh, gosh.
Oh, God.
I think we need to make sure we give ourselves plenty of time with this next one. So could you please read for us Ambience and Cigarettes?
I honestly don't know that I've ever read this one out loud.
Oh, perfect.
Or any of these, really, because they're so old. They come from before I was doing the live reading. So
sure.
All right. Ambience and Cigarettes. The blue air around my head clogs my eyes and burns my throat. Ambience and Cigarettes. The constant buzz of sounds makes it too hard to concentrate, let alone think. I don't even know what that line means. <That's okay. laughs> Ambience and alcohol. The two girls in the corner booth send encoded signals that I can't quite translate. Ambience and love. The situation that confronts me is too much to bear for one poor lonely soul. Ambience and cigarettes and alcohol and love and a table in the corner with none of the above. God.
Oh, and it had to rhyme at the end.
It needed to rhyme. It needed the rhyme.
Apparently. Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there that you really don't want to.
Yeah, moving on. Next poem.
Next. We must. This is our the burden we bear. Whew. Okay. Where to start? Dave, please start us off.
Dave starts. Here's a question. Because when Aaron read the title, he said ambience. And you read it as ambiance.
Yes.
And they're the same word, correct? But like,
well, now I'm
when I think of like ambient, I think of ambient lighting or ambient sounds.
But ambiance. That's like you know, the room, the feeling of the room, kind of.
Yeah.
They come from the same root.
Yeah.
But
this would normally be my shtick to know, but
are you guys saying shtick intentionally over and over again?
No.
Oh no. Sorry. Not at all.
I think you just have it in your head. Like,
it's my shtick.
Cool. If you wanna advertise me, go right ahead.
Absolutely.
Shtick. Not stick.
That's enough.
Yeah, it's maybe it's the subliminal. You have your background stick figure poetry, and we're just reading it, and it's just coming.
This does make me think, though, like on a deep emotional level, stick figure poetry submissions at gmail.com. Stick figure poetry submissions at gmail.com.
You read that really well.
I'm pretty good at reading. I know most of my letters, so
yeah.
You know.
I mean, look at me. I read it as ambient since. So, were you a frequenter to the bars?
It was actually diners.
Okay.
Because that's basically all we had to do in the 90s in the small town that I grew up in.
This would have been pre-outline cigarettes in
absolutely. We would be in the smoking section. Got this is like a history
sure.
for you younger folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of, and I'm going to point out the irony of this is that I did not drink or smoke or really flirt with girls. So honestly, like, I was the chubby, dorky kid that, like, you know, with social anxiety, who didn't like, he would just sit there silently and like drink his iced tea. Basically, I was the most vanilla, boring person on earth, and I pretty much still am. But
you're among good company, then.
Yeah. But you're writing poetry in an era and in a time where did you feel like it had to sound like this or look like this? And reference cigarettes and alcohol. And...
Well, actually, most of my friends smoked at that point.
Okay.
So I would actually be the only person that would ever have a lighter, just because I was so sick of everybody trying to like bum lighters from everybody that around us. So I would just carry one with me and be like, here, fine. Light your damn cigarette. I was that person that like all the cigarette smoke would automatically waft right towards me, no matter where I was sitting. And then like as soon as I would move, it would change direction and come at me again. Like, yeah.
I love that. That's like the pinnacle of social anxiety, to be like so nervous about your friend asking a stranger for a lighter that you're like, I'm going to have the lighter. You don't ask anyone else.
And it evolved out of that to the point where I had a trench coat and I would have like everything in my pockets. I had a mini cheese grater in my pocket for a really long time. Like, because, you know, if your friend needs a cheese grater, and you don't want him asking other people for one, right? You know?
Yeah.
Got to get that Parmesan fix. I know. I get it.
Just say when.
So then this poem is aspirational for you to be that guy?
I don't know. I suppose.
The way that the rhyming couplet at the end reads, it sounds like the table with the two girls has no cigarettes, alcohol, or love at that table. And yet, I feel like what you meant to say was that the person observing the scene is the one, one lacking.
Oh, yeah. They're both in the corner, aren't they?
Yeah, the two girls are in the corner booth.
Yeah,
so I thought...
You didn't edit this very well. In 1990, whatever it was.
how dare you leave that? Also, table is randomly capitalized.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not just Google Docs.
It is you.
I've been doing that for decades, I guess.
Nope. Okay. Send encoded signals is the idea, and you might not remember, is the idea that you wish or perceive that the two girls are like potentially giving you signals, giving you eyes, and you're just like not picking up or not brave enough to step forward?
Well, from my memory when I wrote this, it was actually they were talking to each other, sending encoded signals. But I meant to imply otherwise by the poem.
Sure.
Hey, you want it bad. You got it.
No, this is great.
Yeah, this is perfect.
Exactly. Now, again, I'm going to make a pop culture reference that might land flat that I'll cut for sure because it was awkward. Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk. Are you familiar with that song?
No.
Oh, Aaron. I see, we're talking about social anxiety, and you can see it in Aaron's face right now. He has to leave this in now, because man, did that reference fall flat.
Someone out there will know Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk. And
no one will, Aaron.
They'll be singing it in their head right now.
He just encapsulated everything.
Yes! No. You two are in the corner just sending signals that I'm not picking up on. I'm in the corner with none of the above. That's how I feel right now.
You didn't get the rhyme in, though.
Yeah, I failed at the rhyme. Dang it. Not feeling the love because I have none of the above. The boldness of working a rhyme.
I did a whole lot more rhyme back then than I do now. Like, even when I do rhyme, I'm not talking way back when, I'm talking about now. If I do end up doing rhyme, I do it sporadically.
Yeah.
Like, I will not end every line with a rhyme intentionally because it bothers me.
Sure.
So, one might be an end of a line, the one other one might be in the middle of the next line or whatever. So, I don't like them to be consistent at all. That's just the way I prefer rhyme.
I like that.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of fun because I sometimes struggle with that as well. Like, I can be reading some beautiful poetry that is calling to mind the human condition and helping me understand people. And then it's just like, really, is that the word you wanted to use? Or
right. Yeah.
You just needed a rhyme. So, okay, fine. Yeah. You do you.
Yeah, it cannot be forced. It cannot even. And I feel like even when it's not forced, when you have it at the end of the line and every line, it looks forced. It just feels forced, even if it's not forced.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I shy away from it.
Sure. I've just noticed this poem has no punctuation.
Oh, I didn't. I did that a lot. Interesting. I think I still do that a lot. Okay. I will. This is going to shock you, but I will use capitalization on the lines where punctuation should be before it.
Ah.
But of course, then there's random capitalization in Christian music.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking, though, that like with this, oh gosh, the structure of this, if you could see this, dear listeners, we have a couplet, a single line, a three-line stanza, a single line, three-line, single line, three-line couplet. So it's not...
Yeah, I apparently could not fit that third line in that first...
Yeah.
It's not quite like it doesn't quite mirror itself. It doesn't quite carry a pattern throughout. But without the punctuation, it almost feels like that rhyme that you forced at the end. It feels like this is your period. It's like, now you know it is done. I have rhymed. It is closed.
You may be onto something there.
This is your FIN at the at the end of a pretentious film.
Just Excelsior. See, that beautiful. One didn't fall flat. All right. I'm one up on you, Aaron.
Yeah. You're like 12 up on us. That's fine.
Way more. Yeah. You just make better references.
Speaking of making better references, let's talk about Making Love with Lady Death.
All right. And I will start by saying that when I wrote this, I thought this was the bomb. I thought this was like the best thing I'd ever written in my entire life. And this is actually like a college era poem. So I see it probably 1995, 96.
Okay.
Making love with Lady Death. Phase one, fear. With the tension of the first kiss, wheels lock, gears grind, but I remain in motion. It's hot, passionate heart failure, exhilarating, terrifying, and inspiring. Phase two, abandon. Muscles tighten in a sudden embrace that may as well be eternal. Nothing matters anymore as I slide along the curves and byways of her body, letting momentum and fate carry me where they will. Phase three, realization. A one-night stand, over in a sensuous flash of breathlessness, blaring horns, and peeled back eyelids. An instant interrupted thrill, lacking the expected, awaited, anticipated impact to satisfy. Not this time, anyway. This time, I'll walk away.
Those were the softest snaps I've ever heard.
I don't think the listeners even heard those snaps.
Yeah, that's okay. might I venture a guess? You referenced your friend's dance with death walking through traffic. This seems to be a direct reference to that incident. Is that?
It is not.
Oh, okay. I was picking up a lot of car imagery here.
Well, I wrote a lot of car poems.
Okay.
In this era, because I was a commuter in college. Well, I was on the road a lot, and I only lived like 20 minutes, a half an hour from school. So I would go home in between classes and things. So I was like on the road all the time. So like that was like my main period of when I wrote a lot of things in that time period, some of which actually survived to make it into my book, believe it or not.
Nice.
Huh.
Yeah.
In edited form, of course.
But, right.
No, this actually stemmed from an incident where I did a very risky pull into the next lane between a car in front of me and a tractor trailer behind me.
Oh gosh.
And there wasn't a whole lot of room to get over. And as soon as I got over, the person in front of me slammed on their brakes.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So thus the blaring horns, because the truck driver was not happy about it.
Yep. Yep. So
my muscles are tightening right now.
Yeah. And also keep in mind that you guys are probably far too young to know what this is, but I drove a Geo Metro.
No
now, a Geo Metro is probably maybe the size of like a Kia Soul.
Oh,
but
okay.
I was in an accident with this thing and styrofoam flew up out of the front end when I this was literally like what you would pack your computer in with a thin layer of plastic over it. And that was the car. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
It got stuck in the snow one time. And I was like, I couldn't back it out because it was super light. It didn't weigh anything. So I'm like, wait a minute. I just picked it up and moved it out of the snow. So if I was hit by a tractor trailer in that thing,
yeah,
just imagine.
That's a sure way to meet Lady Death.
Exactly.
So what you are describing, like Dave says, it tenses the muscles. The situation that you were in was very visceral. This poem didn't capture that for me.
No.
No, it's...
It does feel really detached from the emotion of...
Does.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the whole feeling of, well, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been so bad. I think there's that morbid curiosity there.
Okay.
I understand. Okay.
Two.
Yeah, because you're sexualizing it. You're adding some sensualness to the encounter. It's, I don't know. I mean, theoretically, I like the concept. I'm trying to figure out how this is so bad.
Well, it just feels so purposefully split, but there's not like a change between the splits.
With the phases?
Yeah, it's like phase one, fear. Nah, it's already recognizing that it's going to be okay. Phase two, abandon. It's okay. Everything's fine. Realization, yeah, walk away. It's fine. It's cool.
Maybe next time. Yeah.
Maybe next time. Yeah.
So the car imagery, it shows up here within the, I guess, the third line. It feels like the second true line because the phases almost break it up into its own stances. But wheels lock, gears grind, and it's like, that's not talking about making love in any form that I know of. So it kind of takes you out of the initial imagery. And then, like, it took me a while to come back in to see, like, is he talking about a car? Oh, yes, he's talking about a car because there's byways.
And if I recall, that was a later addition. Oh. So I was like, wow, there needs to be more car stuff in here. Kind of. Yeah.
I would agree because we don't really, with that wheels lock, gears grind, if you didn't have that slight reference to byways, the glaring reference to blaring horns and peeled back.
Oh.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's almost too subtle.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what took me out of it right away, is the minute I heard wheels lock, gears grind, I was not as invested in the love with Lady Death as to trying to solve if this actually is about a car drive. That was my realization there.
Nice.
See, and I was going mechanical. Like I was making this a sci-fi, Lady Death is an automaton, like gears locking as
may
a
have
Lady
been better,
Death
actually.
some cyberpunk sex scene right here, there, Dave.
You know me so well, Aaron.
That's a very niche genre, but okay.
I know someone who writes that genre, actually. Yes.
You should lend them this poem.
Yeah.
You have brought for us three very different bad poems,
yeah.
In style and subject matter, and I love that.
That is actually how I write. I do not write. I write like across the gambit. I do not like to write about the same thing like multiple times.
Well, what I loved about I haven't gotten my hands on Twists yet. It's in the mail. But the back of the book talks about how it's a gathering of so many different things. Mm-hmm. And so would you say that even within that collection, the genres and the subjects are, it's kind
absolutely
of a random gathering then?
Absolutely.
Nice.
I was trying to come up with a pun of other people have a shtick, but you have stick figure poetry. Because I feel like I have to reference it at least six more times before we close. But I couldn't come up with anything. I'm sorry.
Try harder.
Yeah.
I know. I have to do better.
You said that you wrote this one in college then?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where I really started doing the reading stuff.
Okay.
Like we had a small group that would gather. And the funny thing is, back then, I did not read well at all. Like I was... of course, being socially awkward and like it was just like sheer nerves,
yeah.
You know, constant like the shaking and the like, you know, I couldn't even like read out loud in high school when like I was called upon in class and stuff. Yeah. Like that. But yeah. But since then, doing it enough made me a little bit better at it at that point. But it was not until about 20 years ago when I had a child that I really started getting good at reading out loud, because once you've read out loud every night and to an audience that would, while you're reading Harry Potter, go, that's not Hagrid's voice. You did it wrong. You
know? Yep.
Yep.
There is no audience that can compare to that. So like nothing could be worse than that. So you just get that confidence level of like, oh yeah, my God, I can do this. There's no problem.
Yes.
These people aren't going to attack me for it, for anything that I
right.
So
I'm not going to get heckled like I am when I screw up with my kids. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Do you have any public readings on the books anytime soon?
Well, interestingly, the daughter that I just mentioned that I was reading to actually had her first public reading last night.
That's so cool.
Her first feature reading was at our local Barnes & Noble.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. She's 20 now. So like, she's not like a child.
Yeah, but even still.
But that's a proud papa moment, right?
Yeah, very much so. And actually, I believe I made that like proud poet papa because, you know, it's got alliteration. I think that's the exact quote that I used on the Facebook page.
That's so cool.
Nice.
Oh, man. So has she seen these poems?
Oh, God, no.
You don't want to poison her mind with
that. Yeah, exactly. It was funny because like when she was younger, when she was really small, she found a notebook of my stuff. And she, I mean, it's her mother is also a writer.
Okay.
So she brought the notebook to her mom and said, "Mommy, I found your book of poems." Because she had no idea that I wrote anything.
Okay.
Like, so sure. my wife was just like, "Those aren't mine, honey. Those are your father's." And she's like, "He writes poetry?"
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah. Does she have any work published online anywhere?
She does not. Not okay. yet. I mean, like, not even in my journal.
Well, I mean, way to not be a nepotist. I appreciate it. Daryl, this has been an incredibly fun time. I hope you have enjoyed your time with us today.
And if you haven't, too bad, because you already wasted an hour with us. Sorry.
We cannot give it back to you. But we do end each week here on My Bad Poetry with the words of a true poet. And so would you be willing to read for us another one of your poems, one that you are, in fact, very proud of?
Absolutely.
Great.
I think I'm going to go with this one, though, because it's got that same sort of dark sensibilities as some of the ones we've heard before. But my poetry has gotten a lot funnier now.
Nice.
Okay.
Awesome. While still remaining dark, which is this is like a, yeah, it's a strange, yeah. Anyway, this one is called Exorcism, and it is from my book, Twist, Scabbard Ephemera.
Nice.
Exorcism. After that supernatural thriller on Netflix, I really should have known better than to try to clean my fridge. I think all the ghosts in my house reside in the refrigerator. I can see the remnants of the poltergeist's untold havoc and destruction amid the jars and bottles of condiments in the door. Hear the raspy whispers echoing through ancient leftover containers, and sense those silent spirits that haunt the no man's land between the jellies and the salsa. But unlike any ghost hunter or paranormal investigator on TV, I have no EMF detectors, no night vision video cameras, no voice recorders for gathering EVP. I have no blessed crosses or spells or magic crystals. I go in armed only with a dish rag and soapy water to exorcise my demons and purge the evil from my home.
I love it. That's yeah. so fun.
That was good. Nice. As one who just cleaned out the fridge last week, that one hit home.
What's really funny is that the entire first segment of my book is intentionally to like kind of highlight my weird quirks that make me like strange. But everyone who seems to like comment on this book is always like, "I saw myself in every one of those poems." I'm like, so, all right, is that successful or is that highly unsuccessful? Because as a rule, that means it's successful, but they're completely contrary to the attempt of what I'm trying to do. But I'll take it either way, you know?
Yeah. Success, just not at what you were trying to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's fine. That counts.
Well, if you do find that one sheet of paper that's been lost, please reach out. We will get you back on the show. But until next time, this has been My Bad Poetry.
Now you go write some of your own bad poetry.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Okay.
I think I added the word, though, but you know.
You did. But you know, you added
That's what I do. I don't do the assignment yet. I still do the assignment. It's like my claim to fame. Rhyme free does matter.